Lecture 7. I powerfully visualize my stem cells. Santa's gift program to me in this seminar. How I train my genie stem cells. How I train my genie stem cells. And the genie asks us, each stem cell asks us as the genie and says what?
My wish is your command. My wish is your command.
Thank you. Lecture 7, I powerfully visualize my stem cells. I best visualize my stem cells by visualizing me whole and perfect. How do you want to visualize your stem cells? Do you want to visualize your stem cells as you whole and perfect? Is that how you want to visualize your stem cells? Do you want to be whole and perfect? How do you want to be my ideal self? Of course, everybody wants to be my ideal self. Everybody wants to be the ideal self. And I am, that's true. But everyone wants to be the ideal self. Now, can you imagine me walking around being the ideal self, Sylvia? Wouldn't I look silly? If I am my ideal self, then I'm Herb Byerly in all the attitudes I think about Herb Byerly. When I'm the ideal self, then I'm what? The ultimate of the ultimate. Yeah, the allness of the allness, the isness of the isness. And I don't even understand that. And I don't need to, do I?
No.
Do you need to understand that you are the allness of the universe to be the allness of the universe?
No.
Do you need to understand that you are your particular self to understand who your particular self is? Do you even understand who you are? Anita, do you know who lives inside of that body you have there? You're getting to know there, aren't you? Little by little. And you're finding out that that person living in there is perfect. And that spirit that lives in there is what?
Ideal.
The ideal.
The ideal.
And this is what we want to always constantly keep before us. The ideal. Now, you say, Herb, you keep playing at these games. You keep playing at these games. And look, I wrote up this entire script here for our seminar to develop a program for you guys to bring you to a state of awareness of your consciousness that if you follow me step by step and don't think, oh, I've heard that before. Don't think I know it all. Just follow me step by step. Who was I told to be into computers? One of you I told to be into computers. I think it was you, Christina. I said, you know all about the computers already. Somebody doesn't know all about computers. And I said to them, you may recall when I say this now, I said to them, go to your instructor in computers and tell him, oh, that's about driving we were talking about, the driving, yeah. Go to an instructor about driving and tell the instructor, now look, I have my license, I have driven, but I want to take an absolute refresher course. A refresher course that says, I have never driven in my life. So that I get the foundation squarely from you, from your point of view. You're teaching a neophyte, someone who never drove before. And that's the way I'll play the game with you. So if you play that game with me, teach me as though I never drove before. And what happens when they teach you as though you had never driven before? They tell you things you forgot. They tell you things about your driving experiences and your driving ability that you forgot. And what's the first thing the driving instructor would say to you? Your driving instructor, if your driving instructor is any good, He'll be like a flight instructor. And he will say to you, what, Ellen?
Go around the airplane.
Do a walk around of your car. Do a walk around of your plane. Do a walk around. And look. Look at the wheels to see if they're there. Look at the propeller and see if it's there. Look at the wings and see if they're all, if their wings are there. People have stolen wings off of airplanes. They have stolen propellers off airplanes and damaged them sometimes too. Like for instance, a big storm come up during the night and a branch went boom across the plane and messed up the plane. And you didn't even notice that. It broke wires and so forth. You didn't even notice that. And you got up, you start flying, and all of a sudden your wings fall off. Now everything falls apart because it's not properly together. Now, Mark and I were checking out our airplane one time, you recall? I told you a story. And as we were checking out, I sat inside, and he did the walk around. My son is a genius. He is a super, super, super. He walks around the airplane. He climbs in. I'm sitting in the co-pilot seat. And he tries to start the engine. And what did he say? The propeller's missing. He didn't even notice that the propeller was taken. Someone had borrowed our propeller. Our propeller. Without a propeller, the plane doesn't go anyplace, you know? Now, you see, if Mark had been really attentive... But that's his plane. It's always okay. It's always okay. His plane is always okay. There's never any problem. But this time, there was something missing. That's what walk-arounds are for. So, and you know how you start that plane? You take the prop and you pull it, because it doesn't have electric starter. And he didn't even notice that it wasn't there. And I had to laugh to myself, and I thought, that's not really too funny. Because if he can be that careless of something so important, my goodness, am I that alert? Would I have missed it too, you know? And the answer is what?
No.
Yes, because I missed it. Because I was sitting inside that plane, I should have seen that propeller outside the cockpit there. It wasn't there. I didn't pay attention to it. It was always there. I visualized everything there, you know? We do that. I go with Christy. She's a nurse in London. And she is the silliest, most wonderful lady you can imagine. Before we get in her car, she must have been trained as an airplane pilot or something, but before we get into her car, or she gets in her car, she walks around and checks the tires to make sure they're inflated properly. She checks to make sure the hubcaps are there, to make sure that everything's in order. And then she gets in and starts the car. Now, I never ask her, why do you do such a complete check? I mean, that she does it, that's wonderful. Now, does she always see it? Because even an accomplished person might miss that, you know. Well, she always does a check. Yes, I powerfully visualize my stem cells. I best visualize my stem cells by visualizing me whole and perfect. Now, where is it that you want your stem cells to play? In what playground do you want your stem cells to play? Do you want your stem cells to play in a playground that could hurt them? Where the swings might come back and clang them on the head and stuff like that? Do you want them to play in a playground where nobody wants them? Do you want them to play in a playground where there's no toys to play with? You want them to play in a playground where they're not happy? You see, you say, well, Herb, that doesn't make much sense. Stem cells just are. No. I give you 3 glasses of stem cells, like 3 glasses of water. And then I say to you, all right, I need some black ink. So we put 1 drop of black ink in the 1 glass of stem cells, and it turns out all black. And it's so black, so beautifully black, I can even write with it like a pen. Now, if I inadvertently, accidentally, put in orange or red or pink or black or blue or some other color in there, that's the color I'm going to get. Now, the stem cells don't care what color I mix them with. No, they don't. They will take any stem cell that I give them and they'll act upon it. Isn't that silly? But that's the way they do. Because they are undifferentiated. You know what undifferentiated means? They have no direction, nothing. They have no name. They are stem cells. Now, true, they came out of the brain, 10,000 stem cells, but they're stem cells. They have no direction. Now, when they connect with the brain, when they enter into the brain, then they become the brain stem cell. When they enter into the eyes, then they become the eye stem cells and all the rest of the body. I'm going to tell you a little story. I've told you the story before, so I'm not going to tell the whole thing. I'm going to tell you a little story. There was a lonely little atom in the universe. And the atom felt so lonely, he didn't have any friends. So he felt that he should have some friends. And he told himself, I'm going to hold my breath till I have some friends. And he held his breath until he exploded. And he exploded into a zillion, jillion, pillion pieces of atoms, separate atoms, just like himself. And he had playmates. Now, what about you? What kind of atoms do you want in your life? What kind of playmates do you want in your life? You see, all you have to do is have one little atom, and it does everything for you. One little atom, and everything that you want, or everything that you ever could want, or ever could expect to be, is yours. And that one little atom can develop itself into everything. And when it develops itself into everything, then what happens? It is everything. It is everything. You have the capacity within you to be everything. You have the capacity within you to be every single thing that ever existed or ever could exist or, you know, whatever you can imagine. Now, is that what the atom that blew up did? That atom was undifferentiated. The first atom that we are describing in the Big Bang Theory, it was undifferentiated. It had no purpose, no direction, no goal. It was lonely, according to our human status, you know. And so, what happened to it? Well, it blew up, according to what we are told. And being blowing up, it became an infinite number of atoms. Each atom that it became, each atom that it encountered of itself, did what? Was undifferentiated, had no purpose. Now, think of this. Every atom in the universe has no purpose. Every atom in the galaxies, in the worlds beyond worlds, has no purpose. Every atom in your body has no purpose. When the atoms join together and are united by a concept or a consciousness, then those atoms become something with a purpose. They don't become a purpose until they are united into more than one cell, because every cell of itself is purposeless too. If you might say, its purpose is to unite with other cells to do something, to become a liver or heart or lungs or eyes or something. But you see, the atoms in themselves are purposeless. They are life. They are the allness of all life. They're the allness of all existence. And as they gather together in cells, in functional things, you might say, then they become eyes, or they become ears, or they become planets, or they become trees or flowers, without something giving them a purpose, they are purposeless. Now, is that something that gives them a purpose, I don't want to say human, but is it human? Is it alive? Is it divine? What is it that gives purpose to anything in life? What is it that tells this glass that holds this beautiful candle here that it is a glass holding this candle? And what is it that tells Ingeborg to come along and sweep around that glass and accidentally bump it with the metal vacuum cleaner and crash? Now it becomes a bunch of pieces of glass. Oh my goodness! She destroyed that concept. No. She destroyed the utilization of the atoms that formed into the glass itself. The concept is universal. The concept is untouchable. The concept that forms you as an individual and you and me as individuals can never be touched. Can never be changed, can never be in any way brought together. You and you as concepts cannot be together. Because your concepts are always unique. It's not your physical, physiological, or atomic structure together that makes you one. It's the concept that you are of you. The concept of Sylvia, the concept of Ingeborg, the concept of Ellen, the concept of Gertrude, the concept of Christina, the concept of Herb, oh yeah, and the concept of Anita. Yeah? These things are all unique and very special. Now, these concepts have no morality, no right or wrong to it. These concepts are just like will-o'-the-wisps. They're untouchable. They exist, but they do not exist to have substance to them. The concepts gather together the building blocks of the universe, which are what? The atoms. They gather together the building blocks of the universe into cells, to form whatever they wish them to form. And they have them form the body. Now, what is a concept? Is a concept absolute? Is a concept perfect?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
A concept, does it have any faults to it? No. Does a concept have any to be to it? It already is. And the concept is already complete. You have the concept of a car, and it's already complete in your mind. It's already complete in itself. It's already finished. Now, can that concept ever be in any way damaged? No. Can that concept ever not be or be? No, it always is. Okay? No. Wherein do we come with the variety of expressions of the concept? The concept of light bulb is a concept of light bulb. The concept of Christina is a concept of Christina. Yeah, nice concept, huh? Now, what is the concept of Christina? Is the concept of Christina beauty, love, joy, peace, harmony? Or is the concept of Christina the ideal woman? Yeah, that sounds good too, doesn't it? The ideal woman. No. Are you the ideal woman? Are you the ideal man? Is little love here the ideal dog? You say, well, not really. He is not the ideal dog because Ellen thinks he's too fat or too thin or too short or too tall or his toenails are too long or he does this or does that. Ellen does not think of him as the ideal dog. What would happen if Ellen would conceive, it's already been conceived, but believe or consider, that's a good word, if she would consider Little Love as the ideal dog, what would happen? There would be no change, would there? Could Ellen bring forth into her experience the ideal dog? How does Ellen bring forth into her experience the ideal dog? We'll play with that area a little first because it gets us started. How does Ellen bring forth the ideal dog in her experience? Don't just point to yourself.
By
say
first,
something.
By first realizing the concept of perfect Ellen.
Oh. Ellen says she brings forth the ideal dog by first believing or thinking or knowing about the concept of what ideal dog consists of, correct? Or did you want to say it differently?
Well, I cannot really define what an ideal dog is.
You don't have to.
No, because I wouldn't know. So I cannot conceive of an ideal dog as...
Ellen, in your, and I'm going to say the naughty word, in your stupid mind, which says you cannot conceive, if you say you cannot conceive, you have already conceived of what you cannot conceive.
But if I conceive...
You have conceived of it in limitation. You have not conceived the actual thing. You see, until you let go of all of the reasons that you think you cannot conceive it, and all the reasons that you think a dog should be this, or a dog should be on four legs, a dog should have a fur coat, right? A dog should have a small body. You know, some dogs are as big as people, you know. And a dog should do this and do that. Well, now, is that the ideal of a dog? What is the ideal of a dog to you? Something to love, something to pet, something to train, something to have with me when I choose to. Isn't that about what you have as your ideal dog? Yeah, okay. Now, what would another person have as their... Say you're a sportsman and you want the ideal dog. What kind of ideal dog would you create for yourself? He'd create a dog with a good nose and strong legs. He can run and jump and chase and bring back a retriever, you know. Now, why are some dogs called retrievers? Because they are trained as retrievers. It's in their genes. They've done it year after year after year. Why is it some dog... This is not a retriever. He plays, but he's not a retriever. You throw something out there and he'll say, oh, let's see, what might I get if I go out and get that? Is he going to get me a cookie or something? Or, you know, or are we just playing? You know, the retriever does not stop and think. He sees something moving and he's after it. If I kick a stone off the path as we're walking along, Rex says, whoop, I got to chase that stone. And he looks at the stone, ah. But you see, he's a retriever. It's in his constitution. Now, we're talking about the ideal dog, which transcends the retriever, transcends the pincher, transcends everything. The ideal dog transcends all these things. What would be the ideal dog? Sylvie, what would you think the ideal dog would be?
And the ideal dog is a dog that pleases me.
That what? Pleases you.
Pleases me.
That pleases you. She says the ideal dog is a dog that pleases her. Now, that is a perfect expression of the nowness, right? Now, do you think that the breeders are going to agree with her? They're going to say, the ideal dog, pincher, schnauzer, this, right away, that way. But you go a step beyond that. You do not have breeds. You do not have brands and grades. You have the ideal dog, the ideal dog. Ellen? Or no, we've done you then. Ingeborg, what does the ideal woman look like?
She is perfect in all her
functions.
Constitutional functions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What Ingeborg said is that the ideal woman has arms, legs, internal organs, has breasts, has all the mechanisms that a woman has for creating children, and so forth and so on. That's what a woman has. That's the woman. Okay, now, is that the real woman? Or is that just the vegetarian woman? Is that just the vegetative woman? The woman that is created for reproduction?
Yes.
Well, now, is the ideal woman...
Yes. She's created for reproduction.
Reproduction.
Yes.
You see, that's what most people think. No. Is the ideal woman created for reproduction the ideal woman?
No.
And let's just play with that for a half second. Why isn't the ideal woman created for reproduction?
Because
reproduction
is actually a limitation of the ideal woman.
No.
Because the ideal woman has no purpose.
Well.
That's what I want. The ideal woman has no purpose for any. The ideal woman is to be. What is Venus de Milo for? What's the statue for? Just to be. To put forth an image of what that sculptor felt was a magnificent woman. Now, what about some of these other dancers, these other figures that we see in Greek mythology? They're skinny women, you know. They're skinny women, but they're very magical. What is it historically in archaeological research and in the hieroglyphic writings on the caves of various areas of the world where ancient peoples have drawn pictures of men and women? What did they draw a picture of the women? Usually with a big belly, didn't they? Because as far as they're concerned, women were for the reproductive aspect. See, that was their thought. And the men, you don't even see their penis. Because that's not the important thing. The important thing is their spear or their muscles or their whatever, you know. You see, that was how the ideal woman image changed. Through the millennia, through thinking, man has forgotten that woman is perfect and man is perfect. Now, do you think that there might ever have been a time when there was no woman and no man, and I don't mean, but there was a being, that there was no sex? Can you imagine there was a time when all was hermaphroditic, no sex, or if any sex, it was within the being itself? There are many, many plants and many animals and many fish that are hermaphroditic. They have sex with themselves. They can reproduce out of themselves. Now, interesting enough. Now, there are many beings who go through life out of the millions and billions of people on the face of the earth. Many beings who go through life and never have a baby. Never have a reproductive act about them. Never have anything. Now, are they purposeless? Are they meaningless? Are they without any value to them? No. They merely go back to the original concept of all is and all is created by thought. So Gertrude said she would like to have a beautiful child. And so in her mind she creates this beautiful child and she brings it forth. And Ellen, where did they find the child? Ingeborg, where did they find the child?
In themselves.
I'm being facetiously talking about mythology and so forth. Where did they find the Tao? Where was the Buddha? Or where was Lao Tse or these other interesting people found? On a lotus blossom. How utterly, utterly ridiculous. But how interesting. And Mary, she brought forth Jesus, and she didn't know a man, according to the story. Now, hey, how utterly ridiculous. Why bring a big problem unto yourself? If she had known Joseph and been married to him, it had been fine. But they were trying to say that Jesus' birth was very special. Well, why did he have to be born of a person? Why couldn't he be born like Lao Tse? You know, or some of these other beautiful creative beings. But, no, you see, we come down through the years and we build in all these limitations and all these expectations, and then that is the biggest thing in the world. Now, what is the body for? Can anyone tell me? Why in the living hell do you have a body? A physical body?
Because it's fun.
Your body is the
vehicle.
Temple.
Temple of the living spirit.
Of the living spirit. Now, your body is a temple of the living spirit. What is its purpose? Nothing. Just to be that temple. So if it's just to be that temple, why does your body ever experience illness or unhappiness? Why does your body ever experience the idea that it's incomplete? Why does your body ever get cut off a hand or something like that? Why does your body ever have itself maimed in any way, itself damaged in any way? Why is that? Because we think so. Do you think that spirit could be damaged? No. And your body is the temple of your spiritual being. So, why should your body ever be damaged? The temple that Bert Spalding writes about, the temple not made of hands, you know, and when something happened, it just grew another part of the temple. Of course, why should anything happen? But they did that for illustration. You see, we are so perfect, we are so wonderful, we're so fantastic. But we want to play the game of human being, and the game of human being is that we are what?
Limited.
Limited? As human beings, we are. Can you think of another word? As human beings, we are what?
Relative.
We are relative, yes. Those are all good words, but the word I'm thinking about is we think that we are touchable. We are judgeable. We are comparable. We are living in this attitudinal state of being something compared. And what happens? What happens? The minute we do that, we say, oh my goodness sakes, how terrible, how good, how bad, how nice. They say of people, I haven't been privileged to be in a nudist park at any time, but they say of people who go to nudist parks that after they're there for just a few hours, they don't even notice that people have clothes on or not. They don't even think, isn't that what you said too, Anita? That people, after they've been there for a while, they don't even notice that they have or don't have clothing on. Now, why is it that you don't notice it? It's just as easy for you to see yourself clothed and see yourself harmonious with your society as to see yourself unclothed and see yourself harmonious with your society. You follow me? Because you stop looking with judgment. Now, each one of you are about the silliest people on the face of the earth. Not one of you have the same type of clothing. Not one of you have the same pair of pants. Not one of you the same shirt. Not one of you the same sweater. Not one of you. Each one of you is different. And you call yourself human beings? Now, human beings should all have the same likes and dislikes. They all have the same taste, right? That's what you say. So, if you're not, Why should any of you be touched by anything that the other is touched by? Why should you have a feeling about anything the other has a feeling about? In the little movie on Bright Eyes we saw of Shirley Temple last night, was Shirley Temple touched by what was going on around her? Did Shirley Temple think the terrible storm was a terrible storm? Now, it's true she shouldn't have been able to climb into that plane, you know, but that's a part of the story. And here she is, a little runt. Yeah, you could see where she was pulled up inside the plane after she climbed through the hole, you know. And if you look careful, you see the help of other things. That's all props. It's all show. It's all props. And beautiful. But the symbol that she represented, the symbol was an untouchable little girl. I'm so glad my daddy went to heaven. Mama went to heaven too. Oh, I won't have her to play with anymore. But, you know, she never played with me too much anyhow. She was always honking over daddy, you know, thinking he's dead. And so, it's okay, you know. I got this other guy. What's his name?
Luke,
wasn't it? Yeah, Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luke. I got Luke. Matthew, Mark, and John. I got Luke, this man, who loved her, who thought she was the most beautiful young daughter anyone could ever have. Now, she's a good creator, isn't she? Now, did she create a nice body? Did she create ability to dance and sing and remember lines? Did she create herself having a mother who was absolutely dedicated to her and helped her along the way? Did she create a father who got a job in a bank and helped to pay the way? Did she do those things? Yes, she did. Yeah. What a smart girl. And she was just a little girl. Like I tell you about Edith Mary's little puppy, the little chihuahua-type puppy that was in the trash can outside of her office. And the janitor found it and brought it in, all matted and stinky and bad, put it in a box under her desk. You know? How did that chihuahua get from there to Edith Mary's place, where he knew he'd be loved, where he knew that he would be treated like a prince, where he knew that he would have a name called Shadow, and he would be the shadow of Edith Mary all of his life? And he, I think, outlived Edith Mary. But isn't it beautiful? And that's a long time. That's a long time. But you see, we do create our worlds. We do create our experiences. And we create everything that we could ever want. Now, are you ready to create like you should here and like you could? Let my thoughts soar into unreality. I take every can't and make it an is. Think about that. Let every thought soar into unreality. Now, why do I say the word unreality there? That doesn't seem like it's proper. Let every thought soar into unreality. Well, every thought wants to go into its ideal expression. And we want to pre-describe what the ideal expression is. Every one of us. We want to tell the ideal what it is to be. We want to tell it how it's to act. Now, Gertrude, you have a little angel in your world called Sabrina. And Sabrina has been hiding things on you. Yeah, yes, I know. Sabrina has been hiding things. Sabrina is actually a most fabulous angel. And she's been hiding that on you because she doesn't want to go and be a full-time angel just yet. But the time will come when she chooses to be a full-time angel. But she's got all the aspects. Now, if you, even now, treat her whatever you conceive of an angel to be, as an angel, you will have the most glorious relationship between a grandma and a granddaughter that ever existed. But If you see her as a little devil, then that's what you experience. Do we do that? Do we do that sometimes, see others as a little devil? Yeah. How about that? Are Hangley's kids little devils sometimes? You see, there's no yes and no. It's, yeah, it could be, yeah. And that's true. That's true. Now, what is it? Are they devils? If you see them. Now, you want to see everybody in your world as an angel. And when you see everybody in your world as an angel, what do you see? It has to be that it starts with you as an angel, right? And when it starts with you as an angel, then what happens? What happens when it starts as you as an angel?
When everybody is an angel.
Everybody's an angel. Rex! Everybody's an angel. Oh, here he is. You were up on the bed, weren't you? You were up on Ellen's bed. You are such a smart dog. You chose the queen's bed, the princess's bed. Were there any peas in the, under the mattress, Rex? You didn't see any, did you? You created a good bed. Yes. You're a smart dog. You came in the back door, didn't you? Did you stop and have a swim in the Swimmix first?
No.
You thought of it, didn't you? Now, you have the privilege of creating however you wish. Now, how do you want to create? How do you want to create? What sort of thing do you want to create? What sort of an experience do you want to create in your world? We have here, I powerfully visualize my stem cells. You don't know what stem cells look like, do you? Sylvia, to you, what does a stem cell look like?
Like an illumined, like an illumined circle of light.
Look, her stem cells are light. Now, I said cells, but she said light. And is she right? Why not? What are stem cells to you, Anita? What if you were to see stem cells flowing out of the brain, what do they look like?
They look like a rainbow-colored drop of water with a tail.
See, right away she wants to put color in there.
And they have a smiling face.
Oh, each stem cell has a smiling face?
That's how I see them.
My goodness sakes. You have differentiated them on their way out, huh? Now, you see, light allows us to be undifferentiated yet. But the moment you put color and the moment you put a smiley face on there, you have already differentiated them. You've made them your friends. And, hey, that's not bad. But the thing is, you got to keep it up. You got to keep it up every moment. Just see them. Okay, come on, guys, 10,000. Come on, guys, next 10,000. Come on, guys, 10,000, you know. Or however we want to say it. And they all deserve the same loving respect that you give to one.
Yeah.
Gertrude, how do you visualize the stem cells appearing?
I see them as little stars.
Stars. Uh-huh. Yeah, but no, I mean, there are an infinite number of stars, 10,000 stars floating out of your brain, huh? Do they have 5 points, 8 points, or many points? Huh?
Many.
Many. Mm. But you see, the moment you say, she says light, she limits it to light. How bright, how strong, how dim, you know? And the moment you say, smiley face and colors, and then the moment you say stars, right away we see points on them. You know? And so, which is okay. Now, you could say starlight or star, but anyhow, but that's okay. Now, Ellen, what's your visualization of these stem cells? What do they look like in your thought? I didn't ask you what you never thought, so please don't tell me what you never thought.
Okay, then
I'm sorry?
Diamonds.
I don't hear you.
I see them as little diamonds.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you have stars and she has diamonds. And you have sun, you have light, and you have happy faces. Okay, Ellen, you're making it up, I know. But that's
not because I had this thought of the stars and I had to change it.
Well, why do you have to change it? I asked you what you thought, and if you thought stars, what if you all thought stars? You all have to change it just because the other one said different?
A star and a diamond is very similar for me.
A star is crushed under the earth. A diamond is expanded out in the heavens.
It has a sparkling light which makes a similarity.
Where does the light of a star come from?
From my thought.
The light of the star comes from within.
Yeah.
Where does the light of the diamond come from?
From within.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right, Christina, how do you visualize the stem cells?
I see them as a light.
As a light? Mm-hmm.
A bubble of light.
A bubble of light. I see. Are the bubbles floating or are the are the bubbles standing still?
Floating.
Floating.
Yes.
Okay. Where are they going?
All around my body.
All right. They're going all around your body. That's beautiful. What is the purpose of the light going all around your body, the bubble?
They see every cell as the pure white light of love.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You see it as the pure white light of love. All right, that's a good step. Ingeborg, how do you see the stem cells? How would you define to someone who had no thought of what a stem cell is, what it is? How could you cite them about your concept of a stem cell?
It is a tiny dot that is able to move on my command. And it travels through the veins very sleekly.
Now, I have to pick on you with this here. A pencil makes a dot. And I presume your dot wants to be white. Or does it want to be white?
It can have any color.
If your dot is black on the black of the infinite universe, it wouldn't be seen. If it were white, it'd be like a star on the infinite canvas. And you say it can be any color?
Yeah.
But
or rather no color.
Okay. I ask each of you a question. How do you see the stem cell or cells? And you said it can be or not, cannot be, and it might be and it ain't, and so forth. You have to be specific. Now, your dot's a good idea. Now, what is your dot? A dot is either a black dot on a white sheet of paper or a white dot on a black sheet of paper, for instance. What is your dot?
My dot is a black.
Okay. On what? On a white background? Or on a black background?
On a white background.
Okay. Can you see? All of us have not even an idea what it's all about. We're trying to say something, you know, so that we can have a conversation. But we're not really saying what it's all about. What if I said to you, define to me what a mother's love looks like without talking about the mother or a child or something like that? How would you define what a mother's love... Or define to me what charisma is. How do you define charisma, this very elusive essence of a person that makes them successful or a failure? How do you define unconditional love? You know? How do you define unconditional love and without using it in an illustration? Well, it doesn't have definition without illustration. And that's tough. Now, Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand? You see, if you're going to want to enter into this concept, these things that we're talking about, you don't have to do anything, but it's nice to have a foundation. So we go back to the beginning, to the drawing board, and we say, what? I am God, God I am. We say, all is God. We say, all is love, peace, harmony, truth, the essence. We say, everything is good and very good. We say, whatever we want to say, usually it's something beneficial. Okay, now, you're saying these things, but they're meaningless because they're not given an application. Once you put a mother loving her child, the child's just born, and the mother's given this beautiful little creature in her arms, and I think they're so silly to wrap it up in something, first thing. The naked child and the naked mother should be skin to skin, you know, and the vibrations should come through. But they wash the kid off and get all the blood and all that other stuff off it, and then they put a towel around it and a blanket around it and make sure that the mother never touches it, you know, because it can put bad bacteria on the child. And that child is so protected from any... It's so immune. Its body is just coming out immune. It has to. That's part of its birth program, to be immune. Because what if that baby were born in the car, in a taxi cab? What if it were born out in the field or something, you know? And they are. And they come out just fine. They take them home, rinse them off, you know. But no big deal. But you see, we don't even understand what mother love is. What is mother love? What is unconditional love? What is charisma? Do you have charisma? Yep. You all have a beautiful charisma. And your charisma is your reality. It is your essence, your beingness. Now, okay. We will reiterate these things because they're not taking hold like I'd like them to. But they will. They will. Before we're done, you'll be soaked in this. So now, Gertrude, sing me a meaningless rhyme that comes true. La 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 la. You sang to us in the scale, and the scale didn't mean a thing. It was a meaningless rhyme of words and time, and it was something that you just did for us. You did for us because you loved us, because you cared, because you wanted to show us that you really had found something very special for you. Now, sing me a meaningless rhyme, and sing it this time in any type of a rhyme that you like. Yeah, you get those last two notes in there, huh? Huh? So you meant him. But no, that's great. Now, what did Gertrude do? She sort of was expressing a happiness from her heart. Now, Gertrude, sing that again with whatever lalas you want. But now, sing it as though you are the happiest lady that ever could be. Say, for instance, now, your sons and daughters are standing there watching you sing, and you're singing the lead of the choir, and the gospel choir. And you're now singing it with la-la-la. They're watching you, and they're saying, "That's my mom, that's my mom, that's my..." Now, how would you sing? La 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 la
la la la la la la la la la.
Now, you did the voice good, you did the melody good, but you didn't do the sincerity. You were off here and off here and off here. You didn't want to look at anybody. When you sing, when you are being yourself, you want to look right at who it is you're doing this with. Now, you don't have to see them, but you want to look right at them, because that's a pseudo sincerity, but it's a sincerity. Now, do you see me?
Yes.
La 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 ha. La 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 ha ha. I love you in the springtime too. I love you whether you will ever do what I want you to do. Hoo 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 do. Now, I look right at you, and you look away from me. You laugh and close your eyes, and you stop looking at me because you think I'm silly and I'm funny and I'm nutty and I'm crazy and wonderful. Now, you look at your children who are listening to you sing and saying, that's my mom. And you look at them and give them your charisma. You give them your love. Now, you see, this is not possession. This is not the idea of making them pay up by their attendance, but it's you're giving them a special concert just for them. You may be singing for this large group, but you're singing just for them. Now, take another illustration. If your mother had just died, and you heard about it just before you went on, and they said, Gertrude, I'm sorry to tell you, but your mom died. You were expecting it, so you were not surprised totally, but it's always a surprise. And so you say, okay, Mom, this is for you. Now, what sort of a voice would you use if you said, Mom, this is for you? With your heart filled with love, your heart filled with release, your heart filled with charisma, your heart filled with everything. How? Give me a little rendition. Great. Now, remember this. This is what you do with every area of your life, each one of you. You put your heart and soul in however you respond to life. Now, Anita, please say, would you please pass the bread with all the love in your heart so that everyone knows that you are just such a joyful person and everybody wants to give you the loaf of bread.
Would you please pass the bread?
Now, that's not what you say.
Okay.
Oh, that bread looks so delicious. Oh, my goodness. That bread is... Oh, my goodness. I can taste it already. Would you please pass me a slice of that bread? Oh, I'd love to have some of that bread. Wouldn't you say something like that?
Yes, that's great.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Yes. See, that's what you would do.
Yeah.
Now, that's you.
Yeah.
And you were being very formal.
Yes.
But that's what you do.
Yeah.
All right. Sylvia, would you say, again at the table, would you say something about the cheese? You want some cheese. I'm not going to help you. You want some cheese now. what would you say? And just emote. Just be, but not silly, but just be something real sincere. You really want that cheese because that cheese looks good to you. Now, what would you say? Now, a little.
Oh, that cheese looks like the cheese my mom always bought when I was a child. Could I have a piece of that and just see
how? No, not could I.
Can I please?
No, not could I. Can I?
Can I?
Please pass.
Please pass that.
Please
pass
because
that
it's available to you. You don't have to beg for it.
Okay, please.
You know what I mean?
Pass me that cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
I
want to
try it.
Okay, now once again.
Well, that cheese just looks like the cheese my mom always bought for my dad at home when I was a child. please pass me that cheese. I want to see if it tastes just like that too.
Don't say, I want to see if it tastes. See, you're putting it. I know it's good.
I know it's good.
I hope it's good. I hope the dumb stuff's not rotten, you know. You follow me?
Yeah.
You got to be real careful with that. Okay, Ellen. You do not want the white wine, you want the red wine. But they're ready to pour the white wine into your glass. What do you say? In charismatic, beautiful sensitivity. And you're not fighting against something, you're speaking about something positive.
Ooh, that white wine is nice, but that red wine, that is like that.
Now stop, just a minute. Don't talk about something you don't want. Don't talk about the white wine. Talk about, oh, yes, I would like some of that red wine over there. That looks so good. That looks just like the type that is very tasty. I know I've had a glass of it before, and my, I love that. It goes so good with my fish, you know, or with my beef, whatever you want. Okay, now do something of that nature without the negative in it. I don't want. I hope I didn't take all your creativity. Look, I saw the way Christina sipped that red wine. I've got to have some of that red wine. It looks so delightful. And they're ready to pour you white wine. And you don't say stop. You just say, I've got to have some of that red wine. Christina, oh, she just looks so ecstatic drinking that red wine. I give me some red wine, please. Oh, I'd love some. Do you follow me? Mm-hmm. Okay, Christina. You're going after a croissant, and there's only one croissant left in the basket, and you would like it, but you don't want to be a pig, and you don't want to be anything else, but you would like it. So you make yourself so indispensable to the croissant by a few words that they give it to you, and give it to you regardless who wanted it. Yeah. Now, what would you say?
Croissant just smiles at me and wants to come to me.
Okay. Very good. That was simple and very good. Ingeborg, what would you say? If you were sitting there and your cup was waiting to be poured with water and somebody moved the tray too fast with the hot water and you didn't get it, what would you say? You wanted hot water for your coffee. And don't say the cup wants, because the cup doesn't need to want any. You.
I like to have liquid in the cup.
Well, no.
Water.
Be like you would be normally. Say something like this. That coffee smells so good, Herb. I'm just waiting for my cup to be filled. It is so delicious, you know. Something like that, you know. And then anyone can do it at any time they want, and they'll do it right away. Did you hear me? Ellen, did you hear me?
No, because we talked about water, so I didn't get the cup enough.
She said she had a cup without water in it, without coffee in
water.
It. She had the coffee grounds in her cup, but no water.
Yeah.
You understand?
Okay. Well, I didn't hear that.
Do you understand now?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so she says, I smell Christina's coffee sitting next to me there, and it is so delightfully attractive. May I have some hot water, please? Or would you? I don't want may I.
Yeah, well,
please pass the hot water, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or please pass the water. Or please give me some coffee. Do you have coffee with grains or with the out of the coffee maker?
It's grains.
Oh, you don't eat the coffee from the coffee maker?
No.
Why don't you eat the coffee from the coffee maker?
Because I like to.
You like what?
I like to do it for myself. That's a good one.
That's not the good reason. In fact, that's not a nice reason at all. You want the goddamn coffee because it's good or not good. You're not doing it because you don't want someone else to serve you something that you didn't make yourself. That's stupid. Very stupid. Uh-huh. You don't do that. You understand me, Ellen?
Okay.
You understand? But that is not acceptable.
No.
You don't disregard coffee because someone else is handling it.
Okay.
I mean, if Sylvia is going to piss her off because she's pouring the coffee and she's pouring it lovingly and she doesn't want it because Sylvia is pouring it, that is not acceptable at all. Uh-huh. At all. Now, if you like the grain, why am I having coffee out of the grains? Huh? Quick.
It's a taste. I like it.
No, I like it.
I like it.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking, why do I have it? Why do I have it out of the grains?
No, I don't look for what you make.
Shut up. I'm asking you a question. Why I have it out of the grains?
That is your...
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah, that's why I have it. I like it. Yeah?
Yeah, but no.
I like it. Now, so you say anything you like. If you like the... What do you call it? The dry coffee? Huh? Dry coffee. If you like the dry coffee like I do, then ask for it. But if you like the dry coffee because you don't want the other coffee made by somebody else, well, that's not the right answer. You understand? I've been drinking the dry coffee long before they had the other coffee. And then I tried the other coffee and it didn't have the same flavor for me that the what are we drinking?
Nescafe.
Nescafe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Taster's choice.
Nescafe didn't sound right either.
Taster's choice. Herb's choice.
And
Ingeborg's choice.
And? No, I don't know about that. And regular.
Regular.
Yeah. Herb's regular choice. Okay, now. Time for us to go up and have lunch. So, come back and join me. My gosh, we put all that on here. Come back and join me at 2:30. And we'll have our next lecture. And it'll be lots of fun. The title will be Playing with the Illusion of Santa Claus. And Ingeborg, I want you to have such an unconditionally loving heart that there's no room in your heart to be touched by anything other than unconditional love. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you're welcome. I love you.